Good morning and welcome to Backyard and Beyond. And good morning to you, Bill Durbin.
Good morning.
I think your books take us to a bit beyond our own backyards. You've written a number of books. Now, the first thing I want to ask is, what's your target audience for your books?
You know, my target audience is basically kids from fourth grade through eighth or ninth grade. But I found that writing historical fiction, I actually have a fairly broad adult audience, which I didn't anticipate. But when I write about lumberjacks and logging camps and homesteaders and the railroad, a lot of people that have family memories connected with those subjects really enjoy my books.
Yeah, when I started looking at some of the descriptions of the books, I thought, yeah, I want to read that. But I noticed that most of your main characters are in their teens, mostly boys, but we've got a girl in there too. And I would hope that that would really draw that audience in. And one of the things you do also to kind of carry that out is you do some programs for schools. And
I do quite a few school visits. I visit anywhere from 50 to 60 schools and libraries during the course of a year. And it's always fun to give assembly presentations. And I found that when I show archival photographs to young readers, they really get excited about historical periods that they might not otherwise, you know, really want to read about.
Mm-hmm.
Really can be a great motivating tool.
And they kind of connect, I'm sure, with the character and think, oh my, what would that have been like? So let's talk a little bit about some of the books. Now, the one that I saw the title initially, and the reason I wanted to call you, was one about a boy who worked on the Transcontinental Railroad in Nebraska. Well, of course, that's right next door to us and a very important part of our local history. Now, I understand that one's out of print, but we're going to hear more about it.
The book has been out of print for a short while, but the demand was so great. A lot of teachers and kids wrote in that it's going to be re-released next fall.
And
it's a story about a young Irish boy named Sean Sullivan, who originally lives in Chicago. And he goes out to Council Bluffs, Omaha, to meet his dad and go to work on the Transcontinental Railroad. And that was really an amazing period in history to research and to look back on. Because in a lot of ways, it was an incredible accomplishment for the people.
Absolutely, yeah. One of my favorite books is that. It's the greatest thing. Now I'm messing up the title. But, yeah, it was one of the greatest things that were accomplished. And opened up our continent to everybody. So.
Yeah, it really did. It was a great economic boost,
yes.
Especially with the recent discovery of gold in California, the development of the farms on the plains, the silver mines, the timber, the beef resources. You know, without a mm-hmm. railroad, none of those would have been accessible to the East Coast. So it really was a boon to
mm-hmm.
America, and in large part due to the foresight of Abraham Lincoln. You know, that was a real priority to him. He was a railroad lawyer as a young man and realized the economic and military and political importance of railroads. So he was really a huge advocate of the railroad.
Now, one of the things I noticed as I looked at your titles and descriptions is I'm guessing you have some connection to Finland.
You know, I live in northeastern Minnesota. The lake home that I'm speaking from today is only about 90 miles south of the Canadian border. I live on the edge of the Boundary Waters canoe area. But I'm actually not Finnish. You know, I've met a lot of Finnish-American people up in this part of the world, and I found that most of their stories hadn't been told on a national scale. You know, there have been a lot of regional stories about Finnish people. So when I broached the subject of a Finnish-American story to my editor in New York, she said, well, yeah, this would really be neat because a lot of Norwegian and Swedish stories
mm-hmm.
out there. So it was really fun for me to investigate the whole idea of Finnish culture and history.
And one of your books is about that immigration from Finland to the United States, correct?
Yeah, I wrote one called Song of Sample Lake that deals with a young boy and his family that arrived way up in the cold northern part of Minnesota and start a family farm. I wrote another one then that actually deals with a young boy that goes to work in an underground iron mine right at about 1906, and it deals with the first big strike against United States Steel up on the mine up here. Then I also dealt with a Finnish family that moved from Minnesota to Russia back in the 1930s when there was a lot of political unrest. And I also wrote another Finnish story that deals with a young boy who got caught up in the war with Russia back in 1939 when Russia invaded Finland. That book is called The Winter War.
Mm-hmm.
So every one of them kind of tells a little different aspect of Finnish history. And every one was really fascinating for me to write because in every case I got to interview people who had actually lived through the story, which is, it's always, to me, the, you know, the best and most immediate source you can get.
And so this, your method, and I want to talk a little more about that, but really brings real true life to it. They are fiction, but I think must be very true to life. So, you know, you've talked about interviewing people. How else do you get these stories together? What else do you do?
You know, what I do is I try to get as many different sources as I possibly can. So if I'm investigating a given period, what I'll do is I'll read old newspapers, old diaries, letters, journals, primary sources as much as I can. And then once I actually frame the story, and I frame the story from actual, you know, true things that I find in the historical documents, then I invent the main character and his family. So they're fictional, but basically everything else in the story is actually taken right from real events, which I think makes them usually a lot more compelling than things that an author might invent.
Absolutely, and there again, I think when you talk to young people and you say, you know, this really happened, it just makes it, that history comes alive for them, I'm sure. Now, most of the stories have boys as the main character, but you have one that has a girl in it and a completely unknown story to me. I've never heard of this.
Yeah, it was a completely unknown story to me, too. I'd just given a speech. It was about 6 or 7 years ago at the South Dakota Reading Association, and I was driving back across South Dakota and into Minnesota. And National Public Radio had a program on called Lost and Found Sound, where they interviewed people who had found old wax recordings and old records, and actually interviewed them and went and tried to play these devices. And one guy called into the radio, and he said, you know, my grandfather was a lector. He read novels and poetry, short stories, newspaper articles to cigar workers as they rolled cigars around Tampa, Florida. And I thought, man, what a poetic idea, you know, the idea that somebody would read to these workers as they worked on their...
I can't imagine a company even hiring somebody to do that.
Yeah, actually, the way the system worked, the cigar company employed the workers. Then the workers had a committee where they would interview someone who had a, you know, real powerful speaking voice and who was literate and had a big personal library because he actually read from his own books. And the workers committee would hire the person, and then he would be the lector, the reader, and he would read for usually about a four-hour period. Wow. During the day. He would read once in the morning, a couple times in the afternoon, and once toward the end of the day. And the workers would get so enthused about these, you know, beautiful stories that he would read. They would go home and retell the stories over the kitchen table at night. And the lectors were actually hugely respected. You know, they were some of the most revered people in the whole community. And then this book deals with a big change that happens in the 1930s when radio starts to become more prominent. The people that own the cigar companies decide that they're going to replace the lectors with radios. And when they do that, there's a big disruption on the part of the workers. They walk out on strike. And I tell the book from the viewpoint of a young girl whose grandfather is the reader who's displaced by this strike. And she tries to come up with a plan to help her family in this really tough time. But it was totally different for me to write about South Florida, which obviously is a, you know, radically different climate than what I live in northeastern Minnesota. And it was really fun for me to try one book from the viewpoint of a female voice. That's the only one I've done from the viewpoint of a girl.
Well, the challenge is out there. Do another one.
it was rough for me. You know, some guys.
I bet. Yeah.
Yeah, I can readily switch back and forth. You know, if my wife and my editor, who's also a woman, wouldn't have been there to help me, I don't think I could have captured the female psychology that well.
Right.
But the book actually won an award. The Amelia Bloomer Award for one of the, you know, the best books with a strong female character of that year. So
I think pioneer women were so strong. You need to tackle that pioneer woman spirit out there. I'm giving you a challenge, Bill.
Yeah, actually, that might be a great idea, especially with the plains stretching beyond you. When I was down in Council Bluffs in Omaha visiting schools, I You know, I looked out to the west, and I could see there's a potential for lots and lots of stories in your part of the world.
Well, we've been visiting with Bill Durbin, and the last question here is, how can we find your books?
Well, my books should be available in most libraries, and all independent bookstores, you know, are good sources for the books. And obviously online, Amazon and independent bookstores have online venues, too, where you can pick up the books.
And if you want to know more about Bill, go to WilliamDurbin.com, and you can see more about his books and more about Bill. And we'll hope maybe to talk to you again and maybe see you in the fall.
Yeah, hopefully I'll be able to come back that way when the journal Sean Sullivan comes out again. Yeah.
Okay, very good. Thanks so much, Bill Durbin, for visiting with us.
You're welcome.
Till next time, here's a thought. A good traveler in life enjoys the journey, not just the destination.